Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, so I ran a very short session about a week ago or so for my six-year-old.
Okay.
Yeah, and I wanted to tell you a little bit about that. This was super fun. We were all sitting around at the kitchen table, and I think I'd just gotten my package from Noble Knight that included T1 and the Temple of Elemental Evil book as well. And so he was just like kind of, you know, I was flipping through it, and like both my kids, I've got a almost 11-year-old and a six-year-old. And they were, you know, kind of asking questions about it. And then like, I don't know, it was a really delightful thing where it was like, oh yeah, like this is one of Dad's hobbies, and they were showing interest. So I was just like, you know, I was trying to relish the moment. I ended up pulling the monster manual off the shelf. I've got like the AD&D monster manual too. And right, so they were like flipping through that too. You know, my six-year-old was asking questions about it. My, you know, almost 11-year-old was like, oh, like, you know, like what if there's a bunch of dragons everywhere? So it was like just a really fun thing. And then I finally was just like, well, I turned to my six-year-old. I was like, well, do you want to play? He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, let's just play. Like, it's not hard. I was like, go find a die. So like, we have like a big, like, you know, like glass bowl basically full of bulk dice, which I'm sure like everybody who's listening to this episode also has one of those somewhere. So he just went and grabbed, I think he got like a d10 or something. I was like, I'm not going to try to explain like the different ones here. And so I just opened, I cracked T1 open and just to the map, because he was looking at the map of the place and asking a bunch of questions and stuff. It's like, let's just like, we'll play. And so I just sort of dropped him in, and like I had him like describe himself. I was like, you know, like what kind of weapon do you want? And he's like, I want like a really big sword. He had like all sorts of stuff. And then so I just had him like, you know, going to the inn, and he met some sort of NPC. And then I just like, the NPC like said something to him, and then I was like, well, what do you say back? And he just like looked at me like, I get to decide. Like, I get to make the decision. About, like, yes. Like, yeah, just say it. And then, you know, so he said something, and I was like, okay, we gotta roll to see if he believes you. And he's like, what do you mean? Like, I get to roll. Like, you know, so like,
is fantastic.
Yeah. So he rolled the die, and he got like, you know, a high number. He's like, oh great. Like, you know, it's good. Like, yeah, this guy believes you and stuff. So like, we just did this, you know, kind of silly thing. I want to say I saw this on like a Matt Coville video, you know, forever ago. I was just like, okay, like, you know, you walk out and a farmer, you know, approaches you. It's like, all my sheep are lost. Like, you know, the sheep have all, you know, like run out around the town. So then we just, you know, we spent probably, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, like having him run around, figuring out like how he's going to catch all these sheep, and, you know, had a few dice rolls and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just really fun. And so we got to the end of it. And then like later on, like that day here in the evening, he's like, oh, can we play again? And I was like, yeah, I guess we can.
All right.
Yeah, so I might have gotten another one between my kids. But yeah,
hey,
it was
fantastic.
It was really fun, and it was great because I think we had talked about in the last episode about just kind of like being a little bit more casual about gaming, like not getting too wrapped up in like, oh, I gotta prep this thing, you know, perfectly or whatever, just kind of crack it open and start playing. So I did that with him. It was immediately frustrating because like the way that T1 is laid out is terrible, because like, okay, you're in the inn, you know, it's like, and all the description about the inn is in one place, but the description about the inn never mentions the NPCs by name in the description. So I had to like flip back to like the NPC section and kind of like, you know, it's just like, you know, this kind of, there's just this silly thing. But it was great because like, I mean, and he didn't care either, right? Because he's kind of sitting there thinking about his character and stuff like that. So yeah, but it was really great. It was a very fun time. We haven't played since, but that's on me more than him. I think he'd be very happy.
Well, that's awesome. I want to say around six is probably when my kids started poking into RPGs to some extent, not in the sense that like I ran campaigns for them at age six, but I started to do really simplified little role-playing scenarios for them, you know, that weren't really using any rules. I will say, I don't think it's a big hot take to say that monster manuals and kids, man, they go together amazingly. Because those are the first, if you have kids and you've got, you know, some role-playing books gathering dust on your shelf, like dig through and find the monster manual or the equivalent for whatever system you've got. For my oldest, when they were younger, the monster manual that they were obsessed with was, it's a monster manual for Palladium Fantasy.
Okay.
Which is like, it was big in the 90s, not really a major force anymore, but I still have, they put like sticky notes on pages that of monsters that they thought were really cool. And I still have, I have not removed the sticky notes because they ended up sticky noting like every other page.
Yes.
And so it's like this hilariously colorful tome on the shelf that makes me smile whenever I see it. But kids and monster manuals,
There's something, I mean, there's something about it. I mean, it's like, well, I mean, yeah, there, it's like, there's something about it that's just like so alluring, you know, especially like, I mean, the, I love the art in the, in those old books, like, because it's so sort of all over the place. Right. Cause I think there's, you know, a hint, three or four different artists who were, you know, were making stuff.
Yeah.
Like
you have like these really nicely drawn professional ones. And then you have something that was drawn by like Gygax's nephew or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's all just in the same book. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's great. Yeah. I mean, like the concept of like having like a creative director or something like that over the top of everything who's setting like the house style that you're all drawing to. It's like, no, they're just like, you know, kind of, you know, making it up as they're going along. Right. And like, I don't know. I just love it. You know, so like, I was flipping through that and I did have this moment of like, you know, parenting where I'm like, oh, do I need to censor any of this? This stuff, right? Because I mean, it's like, you know, it's got like cheesy fantasy arts, you know, so there's, you know, bikini clad or, you know, semi-nude, you know, like women in there, and like, you know, like, you know, some creepy looking monsters and stuff too. I'm just like, you know what, you know, I think it's okay, you know, like, you know, it's they'll probably be fine.
So on the topic of kids and role-playing games, I should offer kind of a final update. As we've discussed on the show, my son, one of his, like, it wasn't like a class, but like in place of like study hall, basically for this year, he's been playing in a D&D campaign run by one of his teachers with a couple of other kids that were kind of, my son and these other kids were kind of picked specifically because they seemed like they would gel with this sort of activity. And the final, like, quote, exam of that semester, they're playing through, it's a published Wizards of the Coast campaign. It was a Descent into Avernus.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I think they, I don't know what the teacher's plan was. They never left like the city of Baldur's Gate, which is where you get your quest at the beginning. So I think he might have just, because he skipped all of the, they just stayed in Baldur's Gate and just played there.
Okay.
Anyway, their final exam was each kid had to run the game, take it over for 1 week, and then run it for the other kids.
Yeah.
And so my son spent weeks and weeks and weeks, you know, like working on this. And I just want to say it was really interesting. Most of these kids were not, like, did not have much D&D experience. Like, my son had probably had the most, and he just played in a number of like miscellaneous games I'd run for him. He's not like a super RPG-er, you know, he enjoys it, but it's it's not his life in the way it was my life when I was his age. So it was just interesting to see that. It kind of made me smile. So the kids were given pretty much free rein to like run. They just had to run D&D for a week, and it had to be some, I think the assignment was technically, it had to be something that kind of could plausibly fit into the campaign they'd been playing in.
Yeah.
Although I don't think most of the kids really did that. And there were basically two types of game that these kids ran for a week. Like, so some kids, when told you're going to run a game for a week, they went and like they started with creating like a world, right? Like, so they went all the way back and like started brainstorming up. I've got this world and like half of the planet is fire and the other half is, you know, always nighttime, you know, like these really big grand like setting ideas. And then they ran that for a week and they got through like half of the first fight in a week. Right.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, so they've, they put all this energy into like this really thought out backstory and this like world with all these cool locations and this history and stuff like that. And then the whole week was spent, you know, fighting goblins outside the tavern where you, and then I had encouraged my son not to, partly because I thought that was not the assignment, which it was not, but I encouraged him. I was like, you know, I encouraged him to make an adventure location that could be plugged into the city of Baldur's Gate, which is where they're adventuring. And so it was fun. It went well. I don't think it was like a mind blowing GMing experience for him, but he, by contrast, my son produced, with the help of copious like random tables and stuff, basically a wizard's mansion, and like you just got to, the plot was just you got to break in and steal the wizard's treasure, essentially.
Yeah, nice.
So he used a bunch of random tables to generate the like layout of the mansion, and then he flipped through the monster manual and picked out cool monsters, you know, that he wanted to put in the wizard's mansion. And it went pretty well. But anyway, I just smiled at that. I feel like I learned, I got a little insight into like how GM brain works for different people. Cause some people given the assignment run D&D for a week are like, oh man, I have to come up with like the universe. Mm-hmm. And like, and then other people are like, okay, there's a building next door that has a wizard in it. And I'm just going to, the week will be spent rummaging through the wizard's closets and basement, essentially.
Yeah.
So, which kid would you have been? Would you have been like the, in the beginning, the great deities created the world of Garbanth? Would you have been, okay, you meet in a tavern and you're ambushed by goblins. Let's go.
Yeah, I probably would have been the like, yeah, you're ambushed or, like that sort of thing. I don't think I would have gone to like, you know, like build a whole world. That just, yeah. Or if I did anything like that, it'd be like, hey, we're in Redwall now.
It would have been
It would not be my original creation. It would have been definitely something, whatever I had read last.
So this made me think of, like kind of a serious GMing topic, which is like over the decades I've been in this silly hobby, I've read a million setting source books, right? Mm-hmm. Like of a million fantasy settings and other settings. And a great deal of those settings, at least until the last decade or so, they will often like start with like a 50-page chapter on like the history and geography of the world.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, is it useful to you as a GM to know stuff that the players will never come into contact with? So whatever, you're playing in a setting and it like half the planet's ice and the other half is fire and the great god, you know, Mordrom, you know, cursed the whatevers, you know, and do you like to see a timeline of like thousands of years of history of this planet and all of the great cataclysm of 2032, you know, do you like having that info, even knowing your players are unlikely to interact with it because it helps you like flesh out the setting? Or to you, is that just a lot of wasted space and all you really care about is what is in the line of sight of the players? And I realize those are two extremes and the answer is probably something in between, but I want to put you on the spot.
Yeah, no, I actually, it's just sort of, for me, it's a lot more just like sort of like what's in front of the players, right? It's like, if there's going to be any history, I think it needs to be grounded in the sort of like what's in front of the players, right? So it's like the Village of Hamlet, I feel like is a pretty good example. Like it does start with like sort of the history of the region, right? And like how the Village of Hamlet came to be. And like the only parts of that I really care about are like sort of the why does this place exist right now in the middle of nowhere? I don't really need to know like, you know, who owned it, you know, like, or where it was settled. Like, you know, like what's sort of the ecology and like the strata, if you start digging down, like, you know, like what the different civilizations were and stuff like that. Cause like that to me, it's like, my brain just doesn't work that way. Right. Like I don't hold on to history facts very well. Like that's a deficiency of my own personality, but so for me it's very much like I would rather just sort of have like, you know, what's sort of the next thing in front of them, or like how do I understand the stuff that's going to be happening in the campaign, less so like all the, like the history around it. It's nice to have that, but I don't need it to start with that, right? Not as useful.
Like I always feel when I'm reading these sections like they're like, how is my GMing made better by this section of information? And like ways in which my GM is GMing might be better is like, okay, I now understand because of the history of how the town of Hamlet came to be. I understand that the locals are going to be, and I'm making this up, they're going to be like fiercely defensive and really proud. You know, if there's historical things that inform how the living people of the town behave, to me, that's really useful information. You know, once you get to like 2000, once you get to like the 2000 years ago, the great curse smote, you know, Whatever. That's
you keep on like throwing out these amazing facts about this place, and I'm like, I need to know what happened to the cataclysm. Right. I knew.
So, on a related question, and we can move on if you want. Do you? So, when people are roaming through the village of Hamlet, and one of your players is like, "Hey, is there a temple? Is there a temple here of the sleep god?"
Yeah.
Like, do you prefer that there is a yes or no answer to that question, and it's detailed in the module, because a person who is really obsessed with Hamlet thought about everything that's logically in there? Or do you like make it up on the spot, or do you throw it to the players in like sort of a modern story game sort of way and say, tell me about the temple of the sleep god? What's your take on that?
Usually if there's no reason to say no, I'm going to say yes, you know, like yes to it. Like, I don't know, whatever. If like the entire town, if the whole thing is like, it's, you know, all about the, you know, the god of wakefulness or something like that, and you're like, well, is there a sleep temple? It's like, no, because the whole thing is like, you know, it's like,
right.
But if it's like, you know, it doesn't, right, it's just sort of a whatever random town, and like, it doesn't really matter. And like, this matters to the character. Absolutely. Right. Like there's a temple on the map, and like it is a temple to the god of wakefulness or whatever, but since it doesn't really matter, I'll just, you know, strike that. Now it's the god of sleep, right? It's just like, you know, because to me, right, role playing is a lot more about the storytelling, right? Kind of that yes ending. And it's less about the like players trying to find the edges on everything of like, you know, or like mapping out what the space is versus like the possibility space, if that makes any sense, right? Because it's like the possibility space is sort of like endless. It's like, yes, if you want that temple to be there, like let's have that temple there, and then that can kind of become the shared reality of us running, you know, Hamlet or whatever that happens to be. Unless it's like it's vitally important to some sort of plot point, right? Like that's usually my preference there.
So that, I think that gives us a little segue into something you and I were considering talking about.
Yeah.
And it's related to Roll for Topic Con, which is coming up later this year.
Yeah.
And if you remember in our last episode, we announced that the theme of Roll for Topic Con this year was going to be Wizard City.
Yes.
And we picked it mostly because that's goofy and silly and it made us smile to say.
Yeah.
Because you're a sicko, you have been doing some work to chart out Wizard City in a more definitive way. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And then I have some questions for you.
Yeah, I definitely am a sicko. I don't know. I do this. Andy, like, you should have seen this coming, and you should have told me I'm not allowed to do this. Yeah, I have this.
I was trusting your wife would step in and stop this.
I mean, this is a total aside, and I don't know if we've talked about the podcast, but my wife and I have this theory that every relationship has a dreamer and a dream crusher in it. So you need to have, and the roles can change, but usually, like, I mean, search your heart. You know who you are in the relationship, right? Of like, you're the dreamer, or you the one who kind of like says, like, that's a great idea. Tell me about the practicalities of that. So unfortunately, when it comes to creative projects, there is no real dream crusher in our family. So, and like,
isn't it amazing that when you ask a dreamer to explain the practicalities of it, that's the same basically as saying no.
Yes. Like, it's not like that's a really good, like, yeah, I'm, yes, it is exactly the same thing as saying no. So I mean, when I told her this, she's like, this sounds like a great idea. Okay. She didn't tell me no.
You feed each other's.
Yeah. So I've been working on, right. So like we have, right. So Wizard City, obviously, right? Like, I mean, we need to know what this place is. So I've been working on the side, I'm going to call it like a game / you know, web app for actually like building out the map itself. I'm not ready to tell you where you can go to see this, although when it is, you know, I will tell everybody about it. But so what I'm trying to do is create sort of like a way for people to collaboratively work on a map in real time. So think like a Google Docs style setup for, you know, making a map, right? And like, I'm thinking the idea behind it is going to be like this, you know, somewhat low res, think like more like, you know, ASCII art, like, you know, rogue, like mud style maps, rather than like, you know, something like highly detailed. So I'm trying to, right now I'm sort of deep in the, like, the annoying part about programming, which is like all the infrastructure stuff. So making sure that, you know, like I can deploy the thing and, you know, stuff goes out and I'm connected to the database and, you know, like all that sort of stuff before I can really dive into like all the other parts and pieces about it. But it has me thinking a lot about, like, both two things about, like, so like what's important to sort of show on a map, like, so that's a big important part about it, but then also like kind of the game design of this as well. So if you're going to have a collaborative sort of like setup like this, I do think it behooves you to have some, like, some rules and restrictions and stuff such that there's like some mechanics that make it more fun to engage with, right? So what I don't want to happen is we hit launch on this thing, the first person who gets in there just fills up the map with whatever they want, and then no one else can do anything. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So, like, I'm starting to think through, like, okay, well, how do you design this from like a game design perspective? So, like, I've made a bunch of video games. It's still something that I want to get back to. Right. Obviously we play tabletop games, you know, all the time. I've designed a lot of games, you know, like anytime we talk about games that I'm running, I'm always like making little like mini games that I don't need to, you know, like for it. So like game design is something that like I do think about and I like quite a bit. So like I'm trying to think through some stuff. And so like just like there's like a handful of things, and we don't have to talk too much about the game design, but like there's a few things that I'm thinking about, like, you know, like these like daily games that people play, like Wordle or, you know, Connections on New York Times, stuff like that. I really like the idea of when you come to the map, you only have a certain number of actions that you can take per day, right? Like, so maybe you can create 4 buildings and you can destroy a building, right? That's on the map, like kind of having some stuff like that, or, you know, whatever, you can only name a handful of things, or hey, like today on Tuesdays, you know, Tuesdays are the only day that you can define where magic items are or something, right? Like, so there's like all these like little things that I'm starting to think through about how do we make this so this is a fun thing that we can kind of build together on the lead up to the convention, and then at the con we print it out, right? And put it up on the wall, right? And so we have our wizard city when we get there. So like that's what I'm starting to think through. I'm, you know, probably a couple weeks away from having anything to really, really share publicly there. But it's like, yeah, it's in process and it is going to happen. So
yeah. the purpose of mapping out with Wizard City would be to present a gameable location, right?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if it's present a gameable location more as to have like an artifact from the con, right? Of like, okay, oh, this was like this fun thing that we put together. But I mean, it does very much lead into, okay, cool, so we're gonna do all this work. It's like, why, you know, like what would we need to do to make sure that this could be a gameable setting, right? Yeah. Like, is there anything that we can do to make this a gameable setting? Yeah.
What does make a gameable city in your mind? Like, so I noticed you didn't mention anything about like, maybe, so you weren't asking questions of like, when was Wizard City founded? Like, who was the first king of Wizard City? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Is history so important to a gameable location that it needs to be there? Or is it something that you prefer to let, you know, a GM invent as needed to support their own campaign?
It's a good question, right? So I think like some of that I do want to have, like, I do think I want to have, you know, some element of history, right? So like I mentioned, like having an ability to destroy something, right? I'd love to have like, I don't know, one spot on there that keeps on getting destroyed and built and destroyed and built, right? And so like when you go to check in on it, you can see that there is like this depth of like stuff that has happened here. Right. And like, so there's ways to do that. And, you know, we have to think through it. I mean, I think for me, like whenever I look at like a fantasy map, like it is, you know, the history, again, like I think this goes back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier, like the history is important, but it's also sort of like, it's the reality of like what it is right now that's almost more important to like what the characters are doing in that moment. So like for me, like a good fantasy map or a map in a TTRPG is one that is evocative enough to make players want to go like, I need to go see what's happening there, right? Like I need to go to that place, like something about that place is like, oh, that is really cool, we need to go explore.
You know, my mind did go to video game maps. If you think of like the map of Elden Ring or Breath of the Wild, one of the things that makes those a joy to like look at and then live in is that sense of like, those maps are full of stuff you want to go check out and see what is down there.
Yes.
And there's always something when you get there, there's always something interesting there. And that's not like, I mean, when I run fantasy RPGs, you know, they're usually kind of quest oriented, right? And so you're usually going or you're following clues or you're following the a trail kind of along the quest. And there might be room for side treks here and there, and it might not be entirely linear. But at the end of the day, when I'm running games, there's usually not a lot of like, okay, here's the map of Baldur's Gate. And someone goes, what is that? And points to a spot off in the corner. And like, we want to go check out what that is. But that's not, I do think that there is a, that is a part of like role-playing history. I do not think if you look at like the way that kind of published adventures tend to be made these days, there is a whole lot of that in it, you know? Is that your experience?
Yeah, I think a little bit. I mean, I don't know, like the Village of Hamlet, right? Like, so like I mentioned, you know, playing with my six-year-old, he's just like looking at the map and asking questions about it too, right? And it's like, you know, and he's trying to figure out, what was he doing? You know, there's like a legend in it that like kind of shows, you know, different like this is a fenced off area, right? So he's like, he sees like, oh, there are, you know, he can't read, so he's asking me what that says. So I'm like, oh, that means like, you know, there's a fence there. And so then he's like poring over the map to try to figure out like where all the fences are, right? Yeah. And it's like, you know, like that to him, like this is like a fun part about it. It's like, okay, like I'm in this place, like now I get to kind of like discover what it is. Discover what it is by like, you know, looking at this thing, and also like to kind of orient myself too to this space as well. So, I mean, I think it is somewhat, I don't know, like the games I played, I think I have usually thrown like a town map down or something like that. But like, I do think there is something about like the video game style map that just like continually leads you down that path of like, oh, I want to go see what's over that next hill. You know, like Breath of the Wild is like, I've only ever played it a little bit, but it was that experience of just like, oh, there's a shrine over there. Like, I got to go get to that. Oh, there's another one over there. Like, you know, and then all of a sudden you're like, I don't know where I am in the world. You know, I've been running around for an hour, right? You know, Elden Ring the same way. But like because it's a video game, I think that it can kind of do a little bit better a job of having something always sort of there for you to explore when you get there, where I do think that's a little bit harder to pull off in a TTRPG, at least in the way that they're written, commonly written, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you had a hex, you know, hex map where it's just like, oh, well, if they decide to go to this hex, roll a d20 and see what's there. That's a different kind of like mentality about a map, I think, than maybe like what a video game should do.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, a lot of it is tied to the premise of your campaign. Like, you know, the older school you get, the more you do get of like, here's a hex map of the Southlands. The PC's job is to just to be roaming adventurers, right? So it like kind of makes sense that they're just like, okay, let's go to this hex over here. It looks kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then you're rolling random stuff along the way. That is an old school way. It is harder, I think, in a lot of the way a lot of modern games and like modern D&D is set up. You know, your characters usually have some motivation that's different from like, my job is to roam around and like poke into weird corners of places in search of monsters and the treasure, you know?
Yeah.
So what questions do you, like, if you're sitting down to make a map of a city, of Wizard City or whatever yourself, like, and you're making a district of Wizard City, what do you need to put in there? And what are you happy leaving to like come up with on the fly or roll randomly or toss to the players to invent? So like you've made the like the silver quarter of Wizard City, whatever that is, like, right? What needs to be in there to give you enough to work with? Understanding that it's not going to be like a whole tourist guide to the every nook and cranny of it. Well, what has to be there?
Yeah, I think what has to be there is, you know, people to interact with. I think that's kind of the main thing, right? So I think like people, buildings, you know, like any sort of interesting non-standard items, right? So it's like, you know, if there's stores, they have whatever the standard adventuring gear is, but is there anything unique to that store, right? Or like unique to that inn, you know, those sorts of like little details of like, oh, like this is something that has been sort of thought about by the person who's describing this space. So when you get there, you enter the inn and they're like, oh, like, I don't know, whatever. Like the only beds they have here are hammocks, or I don't know, like whatever like small detail there is to kind of make the place more interesting, that diverges from sort of like the mean of what you sort of think about when I've entered a fantasy inn, this is what I expect. Like, what's going to be the kind of the difference, the like differences there. Yeah. It's like, those are the things I'm looking for. And then any kind of plot hooks too, right? It's just like, I don't know. Right. Like, and those are usually going to be tied to NPCs that are roaming around as well. It's like, oh, this NPC, like, you know, needs this thing or is related to this other person and this other, you know, part of the district, like those sorts of connection points. Yeah. I guess. Yeah. What about you? Yeah.
Well, I think, so I agree with all that. I also look to, like environmental things that make it stand out. Again, not to keep going back to video games, but like video games often do this well. To me, saying this is whatever in the Silver District, it's all mud due to some whatever, to like the near river. This district is just like all mud, like, or this district is massively patrolled by the King's Guard and like, you know, with curfews and stuff like that. I look for things that can be wherever they're going in the district, whatever they're doing, I look for things that will be true, like environmental things that will make the, that over time will make that district like be memorable, not because of the exact location they went to, which might've been a fairly generic fantasy tavern where they met some fairly generic fantasy quest givers or whatever like that. But I think like, oh yeah. And it's hailing constantly here, or the smell of baked bread is overpowering. Like that's, those are details you can insert no matter what they're doing and no matter where they're going in that space. And I like that sort of thing. Like it, it makes me think, you know, like video games where like, oh, everyone in this town is like really, really small or, you know, things like that. like, is it realistic? Not like exactly, but, or like if you think like Star Wars does this with like, this is the planet where it's like always icy and this is the planet where it's always desert or something. You know, like you can have any kind of adventure in those locations and, but then you have a little bit of like GM fuel for like flavor that you can add. So.
Yeah, no, I think that's really good. Yeah. I mean, especially I'm thinking about like with Wizard City in particular, it's like, I don't know, whatever, like this whole region is cursed with, it always smelling like bread everywhere, even though like everybody's gluten free or, you know, it's like, I don't know, like whatever. Like, I mean, you can really kind of play with that, but yeah, having those details I think is super important. I'm thinking about like, I don't know, like going back a little bit in our conversation and then also you're thinking about this too. When I first moved to Ann Arbor, where I live right now, the thing that struck me immediately upon like arriving to town when I lived here was just like how the town itself had almost like its own colors, its own colors, because like, so the University of Michigan is here, right? So like, I think it was on a game day is when I moved too. Like, so everybody is wearing maize and blue, right? Like, and it's like, it just like infused the town, right? It's like, if you didn't have a strong reason to have picked a color otherwise, you just defaulted to maize and blue everywhere. So, you know, billboards, you know, signage, people, their shirts they're wearing, you know, like just everything just kind of around. It's just like that. And like, it was the sort of thing where like that was so immediately apparent to me. And it's something like where like once you start living here for a while, it just sort of like it becomes background noise until you go somewhere else and you're like, oh, right. Like not everybody is a University of Michigan, you know, football fan or whatever here. But I mean, that's the sort of detail where like, I mean, right. Like, you know, if you're describing the town and you're trying to describe this town in like a TTRPG way, I think that's the thing you know, like you mentioned almost first is like in this town, everybody roots for the local football team. Right? And like their colors are this, right? So like
everyone's wearing red scarves.
Right. It's and it's the, like, what's the deal with that? Oh, it's because they really love the red scarf, you know, cult or, you know, football team or whatever that is.
Yeah, when I think about the places I've lived, like I used to live in a town on the Michigan coast that was near a paper mill. And like the town is interesting. If you were like, tell me what it was like to live in this town. I mean, I could tell you about some of the buildings that were there and stuff like that. But what I'm mostly like to tell you is like, anytime the wind is going the wrong direction, you get the horrid stench off of the, like, you know, the paper mills. I was playing the video game Starfield recently, and there's like a underground mining colony on Mars that you can go to. And because it's like a mining colony, every couple minutes, like some distant like mining machinery blasts and like there's this like earthquake and dust goes everywhere. And like a person on the PA is like, you know, mining commencing, you know, please secure yourself or something like that. You know, it doesn't affect anything that you're doing because you're just running around shooting bad guys in this place. But like, I remember that, that's the place where like it's constantly earthquaking, you know, I don't know. Yeah. It's just details like that.
There's something to it. I was talking with a coworker yesterday who mentioned in Japan, at least where they've stayed in Tokyo a couple times, but like all of the subway stops have a different chime that sounds like a different little like musical chime. Right. So like you can kind of orient yourself like by like the little musical chimes and stuff that are happening. Right. So like if you fall asleep, like, you know, like your body will sort of naturally awake when you hear it. It's like, I mean, I would talk about environmental storytelling, right? You know, like, but also like just like a general, like that's a really good idea. Yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of senses you can play with. Right. Senses too that you can play with for how you describe a place that I think really, really can kind of grab a player and kind of get them invested in it too.
We need to wrap up.
Yep.
So any important info you need to convey?
Nope. Just we continue to be planning for Roll for Topicon. So, you know, like if you're planning on coming, you know, obviously join us in the Discord or reach out otherwise, and we will make sure that you are kept updated on what's happening. Yeah. And then, yeah, more to come on this little side project for Wizard City. But yeah, I'm hoping to have something very public in the next, you know, kind of middle of the month or so. But yeah.
Sounds great.
Cool. All right. Well, that does it for us. If you want to catch more of Andy, you can hear him and John Corey on Zombie Strains, where they continue to review zombie movies. John mentioned that he's probably going to go see his Obsession is kind of the latest like scary horror movie. Out there. He's going to go see that soon. Like, I mean, so Andy and John like actually love horror movies. I've been told that like I'm not even allowed to watch the trailer for Obsession. So, anyway, you can go check them out. They're, you know, talking about zombie movies every week. I think that's good. So again, we've been Roll for Topic, and I'm Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your player's having fun, you're a great GM.